Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to Millennial Sports Talk. Michelle Margot and Ben Verlander with you for episode 14 of Millennial Sports Talk. And today is a big day.
It is. It is MLB opening day. Well, at least the day it was supposed to be. Kind of a tough day, but I'm wearing my Pittsburgh Pirates Roberto Clemente jersey around the house.
I mean, I see it. I'm looking at you, but
yeah.
It's
one of my favorite jerseys.
I didn't put two and two together that it's for MLB opening day.
Yeah.
Well, shoot. Should I be wearing my... Never mind.
Okay. I mean,
well, sure. I didn't want to give my allegiance away to who I grew up rooting for.
Yes, because it's such a big secret where you're from, who you rooted for.
Wait, yeah, from Sacramento. What team's from Sac?
Right,
so my secret is kept safe.
But anyway, it is MLB opening day, or at least it's supposed to be. So you know what I did this morning? Did you see what MLB is doing today? The MLB opening day at home?
Yes, I did.
So the game that was on 9 o'clock on MLB.com was my brother's 2007 no-hitter with the Tigers. So I woke up and watched that, and it was awesome.
This was not the one at Rogers Center?
Correct. That was the one at home at Comerica Park against the Brewers.
Obviously. I mean, there's just so many, I can't keep track.
What a throwback watching that, though. Like, Sean Casey's playing first, Maglio Ordóñez in the outfield, Jim Leland.
It was
awesome. It was so much fun to watch.
I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah. He so even when I was with the Tigers, he's always around down there. He's a big you can always see him in a corner somewhere smoking a cigarette, just looking out on the field. And yeah. Big like chain smoker. Used to like go up in the tunnels.
Well, he needs to keep himself safe during this scary time then.
That's a good point. Good point.
Today is also exciting because we have Jordan Schultz, ESPN Insider, as a guest. But before we get to him, I kind of want to know your favorite MLB opening day memory.
Honestly, though, opening day was like one of my favorite – is like one of my favorite days. There's nothing like putting on the jersey for the first time of the year and walking out in front of the crowd and playing with your teammates. And I remember specifically my favorite one, actually, is when I was playing in West Michigan for the Whitecaps, the single-A affiliate. Yep, single-A affiliate for the Detroit Tigers.
Fifth third ballpark.
Wow, look at you.
I know my minor leagues.
And so the year I was there, actually in the offseason, there was a big fire at the stadium, and a lot of it burned down, like a third of the stadium burned down. And it was pretty tough for that community because everybody comes out for those games. And my first opening day, they got the stadium ready in time, and there were like 12,000 fans there. And it was kind of like – it was kind of an emotional opening day just because of everything that happened. But the crowd was awesome, and we won, and I had a pretty good game, and it was awesome. So that's my favorite opening day.
How did you do?
I did – it was actually really well. I went 3-for-3 with a double. And
hey.
But I wouldn't. You asked.
You're like, I did really well. I went 0-for-4 with a walk.
But that walk was a big one.
And it was intentional.
So what is your favorite opening day memory?
So I have two. One is not necessarily my favorite. It was just my first MLB opening day as a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. It was in 2016 with the Padres. And I was the number two reporter that day. So they had the main sideline reporter in the dugout doing the usual duties, and they had me kind of going around. If you've ever been to Petco Park in East Village, downtown San Diego, there's a lot of bars right around Petco Park. It's an awesome atmosphere. You should definitely go. So I was going around to all the MLB opening day parties with my Fox Sports mic and a camera guy, mm-hmm. And a couple PAs, and kind of just interviewing, just bringing the environment around the ballpark to the people watching at home. And there was this belligerently intoxicated female, and mind you, I was maybe 22, 23 years old. I was young, and she was probably, I don't know, maybe in her mid-30s, and she just was not letting up behind me. Like, and I, again, this is my first time. Like, I was obviously trying to prove myself,
right?
I had just come from a small market and she was just really testing me. And even after the cameras were off, she was just, she like, I don't want to say she was being kind of mean, but like making fun of me basically.
Yeah.
And it was really intimidating, but I got through all my hits and didn't stumble anything like that. So I was really proud of that.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, I was like, oh my gosh, like what did I just sign up for? And then, and her friends were not doing anything to help me either. And then the second favorite MLB opening day memory is in 2018 with the Tampa Bay Rays. It was at Tropicana Field, and it was against the Boston Red Sox, who went on to win the World Series that year and have an incredibly good record. And they actually got swept by the Rays that series, but Denard Span, who's from Tampa, hit a walk-off. Yeah, he hit a walk-off that game, and it was one of those things where I – you know, when you are a sideline reporter and you have to come up with questions, you don't know how the game's going to end when it's right. when it's a tie game like that, right. Or when you're losing, you don't think your team's going to win necessarily.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where you could not plan for it. And I just went out there and interviewed Denard. Yeah, it was fun though. And it was a good interview, and Denard, it was like hometown hero on opening day. So
that's sweet.
Yeah. It was a fun opening day.
Wow. Good answers.
Thank you. Yours was good too. I'm really impressed by your performance.
Wow. Thank you. But speaking of the MLB, that actually leads me to my goat of the week this week.
Your goat of the week.
That leads me to our goat of the week. And it is actually a player for the New York Mets, Pete Alonso. And so Pete, who I actually played with down in the Florida State League. So I follow him on Instagram and saw something he posted the other day. And he's doing this really cool thing for some of the doctors and nurses and first responders in New York City. And he actually took a personalized video and sent it to a bunch of the doctors and nurses that he knew were fans of his and fans of the Mets. And if you haven't yet, I would suggest going to his Instagram and looking at the video he posted, because he kind of combined all of them. And basically, he's just saying thank you to all of them personally from him. And saying how just letting them know that they're heroes in this time and with everything they're doing. And it was really cool that, you know, some were just super happy. Some got emotional. And then he pulled it all together really nicely in the video that he posted on Instagram.
So, that's awesome. I did see that. And I agree with you. That's a great goat moment of the week. You're welcome. I do think, obviously, military or veterans are extremely important to our country. And there's senior discounts when you go places, and there's student discounts when you go places. But I really believe in healthcare workers getting some form of recognition after this. They have deserved it. I come from a family full of medical people. Yeah. I have a lot of people close to me that are in the medical profession, and I feel that there are two types of people that run towards danger, not away from it. And one of them are healthcare and law enforcement. And the other ones are journalists, actually, which I'm in sports, so I'm not really running into like fires and car accidents and domestic violence homes and stuff. But there are a lot of journalists that put their lives on the line to be able to get the truth out there. And I think that healthcare and journalists and law enforcement deserve some applause. So if we could just all put our hands together.
I thought, honestly, that was very well said, Michelle.
You are pulling my leg.
No, I swear. Seriously. That was good. I agree.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're about to get to Jordan Schultz. But before we do that, Millennial Sports Talk would not be possible without our sponsors. And our first one is True Classic Tees. They are amazing t-shirts. They're soft. They hold up in the wash. They're versatile. You can wear them out. You can wear them in. If you go to trueclassictees.com and use the code at checkout, BLEAV, you will get 20% off. That's Believe, BLEAV, at trueclassictees.com.
Also brought to you by Bet Online. While you're waiting this out at home, you can still have some fun betting at betonline.ag. With no MLB, NBA, NHL, unfortunately, you might think there's nothing to bet on. BetOnline has hundreds of places to wager. You can still bet on the MMA, American Idol, the election, and the spelling bee. So there's still fun to be had. Go to betonline.ag and use the code MYPOD100 to receive your welcome bonus on your first deposit.
You know what I was also thinking about? The hustle of people on LinkedIn right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm getting LinkedIn requests And I'm like, these people are not stopping. No one is just taking this lightly. These people are ready to get some work.
Yep.
During the recession in 2008 to 2010, Uber, mm-hmm. Airbnb, Venmo, some of those like very popular companies started during a recession. So we might see some innovative ideas coming out of this.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. I actually saw that article about the companies on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is our third sponsor today. Find the right person for your business with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/team. Again, that is linkedin.com/team to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. All right. Well, now we welcome in Jordan Schultz, insider for ESPN, who also has a podcast himself called Pull Up with CJ McCollum. How's it going, Jordan?
Michelle and Ben, I'm doing all things considered relatively well. I think that's the best way to put it, you know?
Yeah, I hear that.
Exactly. Well, putting things in perspective, we feel very fortunate right now, right?
Yeah.
Very fortunate. And to be able to talk about sports is definitely a good reprieve and a good outlet. I do feel, as I was just telling you, like sometimes it feels strange to be talking about sports, but I think almost like it's the best therapy for me. I do find it cathartic.
I agree. I actually think the country kind of, you know, and it's tough, like you said, it's kind of like, I don't really know if we should be talking sports right now, but also it's kind of therapeutic for the country, you know, like people need sports. And I think back to 9/11 actually. And, you know, the first thing that kind of really fired back up after that you really think about is that Mets game and Mike Piazza and George Bush going out the first pitch, you know, like got the country back going and having something to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the, I don't want to like compare it, but in terms of the country going through a crisis and this situation, an epidemic, I do look back at 9/11 too, and I think about the way everyone rallied behind baseball together. You know,
yeah.
And that was the way that we connected, even though everybody had their own teams and nobody really cared about that to a degree. And it really it helped people. And I don't know when we'll get our sports back. I've said for a while, I think it's going to be longer than most of the estimations, but at the same time, I think talking about it and now we have the free agency element. And I think just having that in your frame of mind is a good thing to do.
I agree. I do agree with you. I think it's going to be a lot longer than people are saying. They're, you know, suspending seasons 2 weeks, then another 2 weeks. And I think it's going to be months, but I do think it's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel, right? Like, we can talk NFL free agency, not necessarily knowing there's going to be an NFL season, but pretty much being confident that there will be one and that there will be sports again. And it's just kind of this taking it day by day thing until we get there.
Yep.
Absolutely. I'm totally with you. And yeah, I haven't even allowed myself really to think about the NFL and how it could be impacted, but you know, obviously we have the draft coming up and we'll have to go from there.
So Jordan, I did a little bit of research, and first of all, West Coast, Best Coast, am I right?
100%. It's not even a question.
Although obviously you and I both work on the East Coast and love it to death, but didn't know you were a Seattle guy, which I have slight feelings about it just because Seattle did try to take my basketball team, but we can discuss that later.
Oh, yes.
We did win though, and we're still... I wouldn't say we're thriving. For those who don't know, when I say we, I mean the Sacramento Kings.
They're actually doing well though. You know that.
Yeah, I don't like the coaching. I didn't like the coaching change.
You don't trust Luke? Yeah. Well, I will say about Vivek in the entire city, like it's the capital, but nobody really thinks about it like that. And he's kind of made it into this tech of like Silicon Valley West of making Sacramento somewhat more of a destination and improving the food scene. They brought in like chefs and the arena's all green and, you know, they're heading in the right direction.
Yes. Also, I didn't know that you went to Occidental.
I did. So I started at Seattle U for 2 years because I was playing hoops and I really wanted to play at a relatively high level. And, you know, I was ready after my sophomore year, Michelle and Ben, to leave home. Finally, because I was living off campus, but I was still 10 minutes from my house. Yeah. So I was ready to leave home. And so my junior year, I transferred to Oxy, which is right outside of LA, basically in between Pasadena and Glendale. And I loved it. It was great. It was like your classic small liberal arts Southern California school.
Yeah, my cousin went there, and it's funny because I had an Occidental, the Tigers, right?
The Tigers, yes.
Yeah, I had an Occidental Tigers t-shirt that I wore, and
nobody knows what that is.
No, I'm sorry, Jordan.
I don't. No offense.
No one knew.
No worries.
And I wore that Occidental, you know, like when you get a t-shirt from like, or when you would go visit colleges, you'd wear like,
yeah, of course.
Like I had random UCLA Santa Cruz. Yeah, exactly. You wear sweatshirts and people are like, oh, like, do you want to go there? Like I was wearing Occidental t-shirts and like, everyone
you know
was
what?
Like, what's
you know
Occidental?
What people ask me? People what? Either say, they say one of two things. A lot of people will say, oh, didn't the president go there? Obama did go there, I think, for 2 years.
Wow.
What?
We have that. We
That's
have that.
Crazy.
But what I get asked the most is, you want to be a dentist?
Yeah.
Occidental. Oh, that's funny.
I feel that.
That's what I get. It's unbelievable. And I'm like, it's a pretty damn good school.
It is. It's super good school.
People know it, but yes. So I did go to Oxy. Yes.
So give us a brief story. I mean, we can obviously look stuff up. For those who don't know what you're about, can you kind of just give us a brief synopsis of what makes Jordan Schultz, Jordan Schultz? That sounds like a way deeper question than I meant it to be.
No, that's okay. I guess, like, for me, you know, growing up in Seattle, I'm obviously, you know, sports has been a massive part of my life since I was a kid. And I always knew I wanted to play it. And then once I like maxed out as a basketball player, I realized, and even beforehand, but I really realized, like, this is what I want to do. I want to be a sports broadcaster. I want to be a journalist. I want to pursue it as much as possible because I loved it. I've always loved sports so much, and I just felt like there was no other option for me, you know? Like, I didn't even think about going into any other field. And I knew that if I just could get an opportunity at some point that I could move forward and I would be able to break into the business. But I think, you know, going to Oxy and graduating and then ended up moving to New York right after graduation pretty much, which is about 10 years ago, I think, like, it was a rude awakening into how challenging sports journalism is, how competitive it is. You know, there's a lot of talented people and there's very few slots, but it really cemented, basically, like I had this sports blog I wrote toward the end of my senior year of college. And I was doing it for free, and I was doing it on the side basically. And then I couldn't get a job in sports once I graduated. I could not break in. So I was writing this sports blog on the side of my actual 9-to-5, but I was spending more time on the blog than I was even doing it at work. I remember doing it during lunch and I just was like, I gotta find a way to do this full time because this is so fun to me. And even though I wasn't getting paid, I felt like, it was my calling. And, eventually that blog, which was called 10 Feet High, it was like basically a basketball blog. That blog, I think, won some award, like best sports blogs of 2010. And that helped get me in the door at a now defunct website called fanhouse.com as a copy editor. And that was, I don't want to say it's a break, but it was essentially my first foray into sports journalism.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, that's actually really cool. And so today's kind of tough for me, Jordan. Today is MLB opening day, or at least it would have been, as you know. So earlier in our podcast, Michelle and I actually talked about some of our favorite opening day memories. Do you have any favorite MLB opening day memories?
100%. Speaking of, like, your calling as a kid and knowing you love sports, my dad would take me out of school every opening day that the Mariners had.
Yeah.
At least when it was in Seattle, right? They didn't always open in Seattle, but whenever the Mariners had a home opening day, I would get pulled out of school around 1 o'clock. We go straight to the park and we'd spend the whole day at Safeco Field or at the Kingdom beforehand watching the Mariners lose. That's what they did.
Your dad is making my dad look really bad right now.
Well, I remember he'd show up at school and I have this like bullshit note of like, Jordan can leave today early from my parents, right? And, I'd always get this like ridiculous look from a teacher. It was usually like a teacher that probably hated me. And I was not a great student, by the way. And I would just leave. I struggled in many classes, but I would just leave school and we go and that would be the day. And it was great. I'd always get the same ridiculously sugary, chocolate malted ice cream and we'd get we get kettle corn, and it was a great time, and those are some really special memories.
It's such an awesome day, and especially for you, you get to go and watch King Griffey. I mean, that's something you'll always be able to look back on.
That was my guy. You know, everybody has their guy, and I think Griffey was
everyone's guy.
Yeah, exactly. But he, you know, there's that famous 99. Well, I think it was actually even earlier where he wore his baseball hat backwards, right, during the Home Run Derby.
Yeah.
And nobody did that. And it was kind of like, what is he doing? But he made baseball to me and all my friends, like, he made baseball really cool. And even when the Mariners really struggled, he was the guy. And it was just an incredible joy to go see him play. And I was actually at the game when he broke his wrist, that famous catch.
Oh, wow.
He tossed me a ball that game earlier.
So you're bad luck.
I am very bad luck. That's that game. And there's an old picture in the Seattle Times of me, I think I'm like crying when he's coming off the field, because I was in great seats that game. Yeah, yeah. So I love King Griffey. He was my all-time favorite player, number 24.
So, Jordan, obviously MLB opening day is not happening because of COVID. Lovely word that we are all keeping ourselves up at night to avoid. You are very well versed into sports betting. You're on Daily Wager. What are some of the things that you've seen out there that you can bet on during this time?
Some more interesting things. There's really nothing, honestly. Like, for a little while there was like Turkish soccer, you know, and like Russia had their Premier League going on, where you could bet on some, you know, completely irrelevant soccer game in like St. Petersburg. I did have a friend that was like asking me for advice on the over under of like Zenit St. Pete versus some other Russian team, like 3.5 goals. And I was like, I literally texted him, you have a problem. Because that's not what this is about. You got to find value in your sports betting. You got to have educated opinions. And I don't know anything about Russian soccer. So anyways, right now there's really nothing.
Yeah, so I actually, Jordan, whenever your show is on, I actually try and tune in whenever I'm around, or whenever I'm around the TV, just to, you know, kind of watch a friend's show. But
I really appreciate that. You and
of
my
course.
Mother.
It's cool how in the last, you know, really year to 2 years, how, you know, sports betting is, it's huge now, you know, like it was kind of faux pas for a little while, and now it's like just taking off, you know.
It really is, and we're seeing it legalized, you know, across pretty much every state. New Jersey was the big one. I just feel like it's kind of – I feel like it's in the same position or very similar position that fantasy football was 10 years ago.
Good point.
Where it's kind of this, like, is it – or with fantasy, it was like, is it betting? Is it gambling? You know, it was kind of frowned upon. It was kind of like this sidebar on sports websites where you were almost – I don't want to say embarrassed to talk about it, but
it's taboo.
It was taboo, exactly, to a degree. And then it really broke through, and it became completely mainstream, especially as ESPN really pushed it. And you've seen this like birth of these really successful fantasy shows now, not only on ESPN, but other networks. And yeah. I think gambling is in that spot 10 years later. And I think it's going to continue pressing forward. I do feel also that, you know, it's being talked about in a different way. And what I mean by that is it's no longer the taboo, and it's, you're seeing it on SportsCenter, for example, Bad Beat, Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah.
I felt like when that, I remember watching that for the first time, and I was like, I can't believe they're talking about this. This is so awesome, because it was a great way to break through and show how mainstream it is. And I listen, like, for me, I, full disclosure, I don't really gamble very much, because I never wanted to impact my relationships with players and executives and coaches. And I never want to root against people that I really like. But doing this show and giving advice and being able to have that platform has been a blessing.
Yeah.
I love that.
In the last couple of days, we've seen, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the Olympics and whether it's going to go on, whether it's not. And a couple of days ago, it was announced that they're going to be postponing until 2021. And, you know, I'm interested to see your thoughts, but, you know, it's kind of a tricky situation for everyone involved. And obviously, you know, it's a bigger, you know, on the scale of, you know, the whole world is dealing with this, and the Olympics isn't, you know, what everyone is focusing on. But it's a tricky situation to push something like that back to 2021 for the athletes, all the athletes involved, really. And just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I think it's the right move, but I also think it's terrible in the sense that as an Olympic athlete, you have such a small window to perform.
Correct.
And to be at your absolute peak, at your apex of your athletic abilities. And if you think about what the Olympics means to countries globally, we talked about like the US coming together. Well, the Olympics is the ultimate. Everyone comes together as a nation and roots for your fellow citizens, you know, your fellow Americans, or if you're from Portugal or Germany, whatever it is. And, you know, the reason I bring up those countries is because Portugal, Germany, Canada, and others, they were pulling out of the Olympics before the announcement from the IOC. But I think I really feel badly for the athletes because they were gearing up for trials. And even if they were to go on with the Olympics, Ben and Michelle, it wouldn't have been the same because you wouldn't have had the same level of performance. Athletes aren't training. They're not in pools, for example, as swimmers. They're not at the track, for example, as sprinters. They're not able to get in that exact, you know, precise training that they all need. And so you would have a watered down Olympics to a degree.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't think people.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say, I don't think the people, or laymen, I would say, really understand the life of an Olympian. I mean, for 4 years they're training.
Just how much work goes into it, like daily.
If you push it back, even if you push it back a month, your entire schedule changes. Then you push it back to an indefinite time where we don't know what it's going to be for sure. Or if it's another year. I mean, if someone gets hurt in that time, then everything they've worked for since they were 6 years old is gone.
Absolutely. And if you're, for example, if you're on toward the tail end of your career, if you're in the advanced age, just as a swimmer, you know, which is like literally late 20s, early 30s. It's so young.
Yeah.
That extra year can make a big difference negatively, you know. And
exactly,
I was listening to in preparation for this, for our interview, for our podcast together, I was listening to Katie Ledecky on DP show talk about, you know, not being in the pool and how her whole life since she was 6 years old, she's in the pool every day. You know, it's like four, five, six hours, and she hasn't not been in the pool for more than a week and a half, but now it's like going on 2-3 weeks and it's going to be a lot longer. And if you start to take away that, and then you say, we're going to do the Olympics anyway, we're going to hold them in Tokyo as scheduled, that would have been really, really bad, I think. So with that said, I mean, we haven't even talked about, but the USA basketball as well. And, you know, I just feel like their whole schedule now is thrown completely off because they have a very specific set of practices, tours, camp. And now if with the NBA season being delayed, if the Olympics end up going on in spring 2021 or even summer, that's a lot less time elapsed for the NBA players to get their rest as needed. So it really is a big domino effect.
I hate to say this because obviously I'm a big NBA fan. I've worked in the NBA and stuff, but I don't feel as bad for those athletes as I do for, say, the rowers, rowing is very close to my heart. I went to college for it. And those people have, first of all, are not getting paid as much as the NBA players are. They don't have a season other than they are literally doing this from college straight to the Olympics. They don't do anything else. That's a team sport. They can't, like, you know, Katie Ledecky is, you know, there were swimmers, gymnastics, people that can kind of train on their own. Rowers, you can erg on your own or you can train on your own, but ultimately your timing is with seven other people in a boat.
So you can't,
You can't practice.
Yeah.
So during coronavirus, which, you know, obviously we're all trying to social distance and stuff. So I feel for like the team sports and stuff like that, where what are you supposed to do to keep, your timing is going to be off. It's not just you might be out of shape or whatever. It's everything that you're doing is going to be pushed back and you don't know when. Like, I mean, and everyone, again, it's kind of all on an even playing field because every country's going through it.
Sports, to your point, would be hit more. Like, I'd wonder, because I can't speak to this at all as a rower, like how long out of a boat does it take for you to lose that timing?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yeah.
It depends. I mean, it depends. Obviously, I never went to the Olympics, but depending on the coxswain and the rowers that are in the boat, sometimes you're all fighting for seats, and then when one rower's out, then someone fills in, and then that changes everything with your stroke, with your timing, yeah, right. with everything. I mean, there's stroke rates, which your coxswain is supposed to keep you on a specific stroke rate throughout the whole game plan or rowing plan, whatever that you guys have set up. But in terms of other, like, everyone's a different size. So if I'm 5'4", which I am, I don't want to talk about it. I've always been short. But if I'm 5'4", my stroke is going to be, compared to someone who's 6'2", you know, 10 inches shorter each stroke than someone else. So
yeah.
even if you have someone filling in, it's just not going to be the same. So, and these people are Olympians, so they know it down to a science. So.
Well, exactly. And that hundredth of a second is everything.
Exactly. So,
you know,
it'll be interesting. It breaks my heart. Summer Olympics have always been my favorite.
It's really a no-brainer at this point. You know, it was the right move. They have to do it. Can you imagine what Tokyo would have been like in the wake of coronavirus?
Oh, scary.
Yeah.
It would have been a nightmare. This is the new reality.
Yeah, you have to. And you know, we could have our sports back up and running, and, you know, months or whatever it may be. But that's our country. So with the Olympics, you're counting on every country in the world that's going to all have their act together and all in one place come together. You know, it's just, it was logistically, it just didn't make sense, you know? So yeah, they made the right decision.
So Jordan, you do a podcast with CJ McCollum, and you're very well versed in the NBA, and you play basketball. You love basketball. You live and breathe it. You have a lot of access to those in the NBA. What are people saying with all of this? We see what's being said publicly. We saw the Karl Anthony Towns news, which
was
devastating, of course.
Yeah.
But what are they saying? Like, what can you tell us that's going through these guys' heads right now?
We did the pod the night of the night that the NBA announced they were suspending the season with Carmelo. It was wild because it was all happening in real time, and we were reacting to the news, you know.
Wow.
And Melo and CJ were together in Portland at CJ's house, and it was like out of the Twilight Zone, because it's not something you would ever think could happen. And the news just kept coming in, right? And then the Tom Hanks news, and then the March Madness news of having from no fans to no tournament. And it was just the ripple effects were unbelievable. So with that in mind, as like a foundation, I was like, I knew how either scared, upset, or just surprised players were, because I could hear it in Melo and CJ's voice just being like, I can't believe this. And so I reached out to some guys afterward, and it was the reaction was almost entirely the same, which was to say, this is so bad. And it went from, I want to play with no fans, to, okay, now we can't play at all. This is the right move.
Yeah.
Because once guys grasped how contagious the virus is, and once they started hearing about Gobert and then Donovan Mitchell getting it, everyone really took a step back and put their needs away, or their needs aside, and said, this is the right move. We have to suspend it. We have to get this right. And I think there was an appreciation even more for Adam Silver, because he was the first one, Michelle and Ben, to make the move. And then all the other leagues
followed suit.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's been the pattern. And I've gotten to know Adam. I've known Adam since I was a kid. So I've seen him develop into this role where he was groomed basically for the last 15, 20 years by David Stern to be the commissioner, and to see him have such swift action has been really cool, because I think the NBA continues to set the tone. So
he's a hero.
Have been scared. Yeah. And players have been scared, but they're also like so cognizant of what this means for not just the NBA, but for Americans, for global citizens. And I think it's really hit home in the last week, where we're seeing, you know, so many more cases, so many more deaths, and players aren't talking about basketball anymore. I mean, they'll say, you know, how much they miss playing, but the consistent theme is, how can I do my part? And I've been really impressed by it.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we wrap this up, we want to end on a little bit lighter of a note. We kind of want to have a little fun with you. Since all three of us here are pretty big basketball fans, what is your favorite all-time NBA jersey?
Okay, so you know, full disclosure, you guys have, you gave me before the pod some thoughts, right? Because I was thinking, like, how can I narrow it down to one? And it was a struggle. I've been thinking about it. I've actually been taking notes for myself, crossing out names the past 30 minutes here, being like, nah, he wasn't good enough, or he was kind of a dick, so I don't really want to put him in there. You know? So my number one jersey was Jesus Shuttlesworth. Now, that wasn't an NBA player per se, but it was Ray Allen. Ray Allen did break my nose playing, and he was my all-time favorite player as a kid. So with that in mind, Jesus Shuttlesworth, Lincoln Rail Splitters, number one jersey all time.
Wow. That's your nose.
We should have had Jordan
go
last.
Made it all worth it. I know. Yeah. That was incredible.
All right, Ben, you can go.
So, wow, it's going to be tough to top that one.
Yeah, I know.
But here's I can tell you that, you know, I've told this story. I don't know if you're interested. I can give you a 2-minute synopsis of how the nose happened. I was obsessed with hoop, right? And I told you guys this. One, two in the morning, we had a half court in my house. The brutally cold winter wind from Lake Washington would be coming in, and I'd be shooting with the lights on at 2 a.m. mm-hmm. by myself. And it was all to maximize the limited gifts I had. So anyways, long story short, Seattle has what's called Seafair Weekend. It's mm-hmm. the first weekend of August every summer, and we have the Blue Angels, and they do the air show. It's yeah. awesome. Everybody's on the water. It's 80 degrees. It's just perfect. It's Seattle at its absolute finest. So we knew one summer, Ray came over, and we decided to have a cutthroat game, which is basically rotating one-on-one. Uh-huh. And it was him, he had a friend, my best friend who played overseas in Europe, and me. And I had game point. This was like, I was 19, so I was in like peak shape. I was really like fired up. And I started yapping at Ray. And I started talking a little too much, and he turned the switch like he was a lion. He went from being like mildly competitive, kind of messing around, to I'm going to end this kid.
That's amazing.
And I guarded him tight. He swept through with a really, really sharp elbow, shattered my nose, blood everywhere, emergency room, complete disaster.
That's good.
He did follow up and call me for the coming, you know, weeks and months. And he sent me a video game with him on the cover and the console. So that was like, aww, okay, this is really cool.
That's wow. really cool. Now now Ray Allen has a fan in us.
I love Ray. I love Ray.
So my choice is, you know, I also did some research and went through a few. I had a few in mind, but the one that I settled on was the Vince Carter Raptors jersey.
Ooh.
The purple one with the dinosaur on it.
Yeah, that was so dope.
It's incredible. My favorite jersey for sure.
Very well put, yes. That was great. That was great. How about Damon Stoudemire, little Mighty Mouse?
Ooh, yep, yep.
I thought you were going to go Big Country Reeves.
Nope.
Michelle, what do you got?
Do I have to go?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't take it like that, though, guys.
Chris Webber?
You don't even have to. Chris Webber.
Just pick your favorite team jersey, anything.
Okay, well, I know I have an idea in mind, but it was not like what you guys are doing. Okay, so I went with the Sacramento Kings alternate jersey from 1998 to 2001. It's purple, the old Kings lettering on the front, the black stripe on the purple shorts.
Yep.
Only because that was during their prime time, and that's when I liked them. Mike Bibby, Doug Christie, Peja Stojakovic, Vlade, all those guys. Also, fun fact, quick story before we wrap up because we're running out of time here. But when I was with the Rockets last year, the Kings came and played, obviously, in Houston. And my mom had sent me a picture because she would watch some of my games. And she sent me a picture of I had gone and rode. I don't know, ridden?
That's like, I'm going to go with rode.
You rode my bike. Your bike. Yeah.
I rode my bike with my dad to go get Vlade Divac's autograph. And I didn't have anything for him to sign. So I gave him like a piece of paper, and he signed a piece of paper, and I have a picture of that. And my mom had sent it to me knowing that the Kings were coming to town, whatever. So I showed Vlade, because he was there. I guess he traveled with the Kings to Houston that game. And he could not have been more disinterested
Oh no.
And I was mortified. I was like, oh, like, hi, Michelle. Like, I'm a Rocket Island reporter, like, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, I'm from Sacramento, grew up watching you, which I'm sure like they get all the time, right? Like, I don't fangirl like that. So I usually don't say that. It's super uncomfortable because why?
No, but Vladdy should be appreciative that to have such a dedicated fan.
Well, it wasn't even like, I wasn't even like, oh my gosh, there's Vladdy Divac. Like, I didn't really care that much because, you know, it's my job to do that. But I just kind of, I said, I just wanted to show you, like, I thought it was funny. You know, my mom sent me this today and I showed him this picture, and then like his friend that was standing with him was like making fun of what he used to look like. And I was like, okay, I'm not part of this conversation. And now they have like an inside joke that I'm just not a part of. And it was awkward.
Let me just to make you feel better. Vladdy is like that wherever he goes. That's Vladdy. He's very, very Eastern Bloc, you know, just in his own world. So don't feel bad.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
That's Vladdy. He doesn't give a shit, okay? So don't worry about it.
Well, Jordan, dude, thanks so much for coming on and doing this with us. We really appreciate it, man.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it, and I hope to I'm happy to come on anytime. It was fun talking to you guys.
Love that.
Yeah. Cool, you want to be our third host? Great. See you next week.
Well, I can tell you this is going to be a really fun pod. You guys have good energy.
Thanks, man.
I'm excited to be on it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. Have a good one.
Thanks again. This is it for Millennial Sports Talk this week. Be sure to listen in anywhere you listen to your podcast. We will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.